Well, hey, everybody, and welcome back to X-Files Diaries. I'm Annie.
I'm Jen.
And today we have a very special episode for you. We got to sit down and talk to Pat Skipper, who played the much loved and adored, wouldn't you say, Bill Scully Jr. Good old Bill Scully. Jen, I think this is one of my favorite conversations that I think we've ever had with any guest. I had a great time sitting down and talking with Pat. We had a fun interview, and we hope you guys enjoy listening to it.
Hi.
Hello.
It's really nice to meet him.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much for doing this. You know, it's funny. You sent me a message and you said that your handle or your name on here was William Skipper. And I was just telling Jen, I was so confused. And I'm like, it's going to be hard enough not referring to you as Bill this entire episode. So
long line of Williams.
So it is your name is William, but you go by Pat?
William Patterson Skipper.
Oh, nice.
My grandmother's maiden name was Patterson.
Okay.
So I ended up with her middle name, and then, but they were already, thankfully, because I really wouldn't want to be a Bill for my whole life. I got to be Pat. That's what my mother called me. So that's what I always been.
Okay. Nice. So that was like, that was just a nickname from childhood. So you just stuck with it.
Yeah. I think they intended to call me that when they named me, but I don't know. But both of my grandfathers were William. My father was William. Mm. I believe, you know, one of their fathers was William. My nephew is William. So, you know.
Wow.
And well, then I was on the X-Files. And so here.
Yeah.
I got to say, I love hearing that because, you know, a lot of the X-Files fandom give the show a lot of flack for all the Williams. And I'm always like, that's a very common name. What's the big deal? So I love that story.
So there you go.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on X-Files Diaries. I mean, you actually are really active in the fandom. You're on Facebook and you chat with fans. And I think that's amazing. Like, were you always a fan of the show? I'm curious if you were a fan of the show, like, before you were on it, or were you introduced to the show by being on it?
No, I had watched it. I don't know that I hadn't seen every episode, but I'd watched it quite a few times, you know, because it was a popular show, and sort of your job as an actor, well, partially, is to keep, you know, an idea, have a clue about what's going on in case they call you in, so you can sort of fit into the show if you're trying to audition for it. And I always liked it, you know, and there was something very sexy about it that always appealed to me, you know.
Yeah.
And I always admired the two of them as actors. So you know, I went and I had read that casting director. I'm blanking who the casting director was. But anyway, I'd read for him for other things. And, you know, it was a tremendous scene that they sent me. So I worked on it quite a bit. And
was this the cut scene, the one that ended up not making it in? Because you were originally supposed to be in Memento Mori, correct?
Yeah. The writing was terrific. I mean, it was really kind of was upsetting that it ended up getting cut. The episode was too long,
yeah,
like 10 minutes, and so it was sort of like, oh, we can just take this out, you know. And then without missing my introductory scene, I ended up being plopped down and to the series without much of an introduction, you know. And that scene that she and I had was really quite strong. She's very good in it.
You both were. It needs to be said, you were both amazing in it. So. Because, Jen, in this scene, essentially, it's the first time we're meeting Bill. It's a memento mori. So Scully has just basically told her mother that she's got cancer, and Bill has found out as well. But Bill is very harsh with Scully. Like, I'm almost glad that this scene got cut, because I think it was not the best introduction to your character. Mm. It's funny. I'm sure it's no secret to you that your character is kind of
Disliked
in the fandom. And it's funny because I have seen that scene and I don't include it as part of your character in my mind, which is going to be interesting when we talk about kind of how we feel about your character later. But I can't like unsee that scene now that I've seen it. And so I can't like remove it from my mind in terms of like your character and the way it was formulated. And I'm kind of glad personally, for the sake of the story, that is not the way we met your character, because it was really sort of harsh.
We have a very intense argument.
Yeah, it's
subtle because we're afraid. You know, we have an argument, but we also care for each other.
Yeah,
so it's a very awkward scene, which much of life is awkward. Mm. So. I think there's something kind of brilliant about the way that it came out. There are some moments in that scene that as an actor, I'm very proud of. And she has a remarkable ability to as an actor to sort of go moment to moment and be very sensitive to what's going on between the two of us. So never having met, we forged this what I consider to be a pretty truthful relationship in a short time. But I was very fond of her, you know.
Yeah.
She's a very lovely person.
Well, we're definitely going to talk about Jillian and David both a little bit later. But to what you said about the idea that you guys have this really small scene, and there seems to be so much history just in that little scene. Like, there's not a whole lot of information given. You give a little bit of information about where you've been, and you talk about Charlie, who we never hear about really again very much. But there's so much behind the performance that you can really tell that, like, these are family members that are not, I wouldn't say estranged, but like there's some tension there and we don't really know a lot about it. And I love the way the X-Files does that. Like, there's a lot of the time they'll do a scene where we don't really have any backstory. We just kind of have to put the pieces together. We kind of have to figure out what is going on. Did you have any sort of sense of a backstory for Bill?
I mean, Melissa has died, right? And so... Right. And so there's a lot of unfinished business with regard to that, because, I mean, that's really where if you look at that scene, that's where that's where the conflict is. And she, you know, and we talk about where we grew up on a naval base in San Diego. And then we say something about it, you know, it's full of ghosts. And then Melissa's name comes up and she says, well, it's not my fault Melissa died. And I say it is, essentially. Mm-hmm. I mean, I throw a bunch of shame upon her. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of unfinished business to talk about in that scene. And so, you know, because, I mean, you know, imagine you're in a scene and you're with your sibling and they've been in a car accident and they killed your other sibling, there's going to be a whole lot of undercurrent of problems. In any sibling relationship, there's always unfinished business, right? When you get to be adults, the people closest to end up being the most estranged from us in the final analysis, right?
Right. You know, it's funny because, I mean, we can kind of translate that same sort of backstory to when your first actual appearance was in the season 4 finale, I guess, Gethsemane. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
And it's the same sort of stuff. I feel like they tried to kind of repurpose that scene a little bit, but tone it down. That was kind of my feeling. Was that kind of your feeling too? Or did you feel like you were playing the same character, or did you feel like you were kind of playing a slightly toned down version of that character, or did you come into that thinking this is the same guy that I was last time?
I just played what was in front of me. I mean, that's the thing. You're given a script and you try to make sense out of it emotionally and intellectually, and you find out, you know, what it is in the scene that is going, the thing that's going to make you happy, the thing that's going to, whatever, what your desire is. And so, yeah, you're always looking forward. But no, it seemed, the writing and the character, I always felt was very, it was consistent. And one reason that people don't really like Bill is because he comes from the real world.
Yeah.
Mm. Right. And so, a real world where your sister dies and it's somebody's fault. The real world where, your only remaining sister is dating a person who believes in flying saucers. but they're not really dating. He's not really.
I was going to say, that's an interesting thing that you brought up, because did you kind of play Bill as sort of this, obviously protective older brother, but who has no clue what is going on between these two people because she probably never tells you. Do you treat Mulder kind of like a quote unquote bad boyfriend? Like, is that kind of where you're coming from as a big brother? I'm just kind of curious because you said that. And so I'm just kind of curious.
Honestly, though, Mulder is the worst kind of boyfriend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't commit. He doesn't, he never says if he likes her. He never, he's the absolutely, Mulder is a horrible boyfriend.
Well, it's a good thing he's not one, technically, when Bill meets him. But absolutely right.
Correct. But isn't that the definition of a bad boyfriend?
Yeah.
Likes you and doesn't say anything. If you had, I don't know if you have a sister, but I do, if there are some guy who shows up and is so afraid of commitment that he just sort of hangs around the edges and makes her life difficult, I wouldn't care for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He's not the kind of guy that makes a good impression on the older brother. That's for sure.
Right. Particularly somebody who's a military person and lives in, a 3D sort of world.
Yeah.
That there is right and there is wrong.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of gray area with somebody like Bill Scully, right?
It's true.
I could live completely in the gray area personally, but a person like that, there are orders, you follow them. There are yes, sir, and there's no, sir. There is no gray area. So Bill Scully and Mulder, or Fox Mulder, are always going to have a problem with each other, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is really interesting that you bring this up, because one of my questions I wanted to ask is, do you think that his dislike of Mulder is justified? Apologize for my dog Apollo barking back there. Because
he's really into this.
He does. He enjoys the podcast. I'm kind of one of these really random, rare, I'm not like a huge fan of Bill Scully, but I see where he's coming from. Like exactly what you just said, he's coming in totally blind and he sees the situation as an outsider. And I can completely see how it looks to him, how Mulder looks to him, how their relationship looks to him, even how Scully's life looks to him. And so in a way, I don't necessarily think it's his behavior is justifiable, but I think his feelings are justifiable. Would you tend to agree or disagree with that?
Oh, no, I completely agree.
Yeah.
We sent you to medical school. The family sent you to medical school. Mm-hmm. You were going to be the one who saved lives.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She saved lives? No. She gets our sister killed.
God, wow. God, you are just hitting us with the truth bombs right now.
Yeah, that is true. That's absolutely true.
Right.
Yeah. But
that to me, I understand. I understand that the character is not particularly popular, but I didn't write it.
No one's blaming you. Don't worry.
It's a sort of it's a collaboration, right? Mm-hmm. And I completely get where Bill Scully's coming from.
Yeah.
I mean, as I say, I think that, I blame Mulder and I blame her for you know, destroying our family to some degree.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough.
Right.
I mean, and I don't see any way around that. It's interesting too, because the episodes, you're only in four episodes. I have to say, when I was rewatching these episodes earlier, just to kind of get refreshed, I was amazed. I was just telling Jen, I'm like, I can't believe he was only in four episodes, because your impact on the show feels so much bigger than that. And it's, I think that's a testament to you as an actor, but I also think that character, it's so important to have a character like Bill Scully in the show, because seeing Scully's family life, I think, is such an interesting aspect of the show, because we don't get that with Mulder. Like, his family life is just completely different than Scully's. And so to see that there are actually these other people that Scully is responsible to, like, right, you know, like your character says, you know, you're responsible to these people. Like, we're your family. It's sort of like, we're your people. Who's this guy? And I mean, I can relate to that. Like, I can seriously, I mean, I don't necessarily think anyone likes it when you yell at Mulder and call him a son of a bitch, because we love Mulder and we feel sad when you say that to him. But again, I think it's justified on Bill's side. What do you think, Jen? Because I don't know if we've ever talked about Bill Scully.
It is, like, when I think about it intellectually, it makes total sense for Bill to feel the way he does. But, you know, when I was watching it at the time, I had a visceral response to Bill that, how dare you come in here and be mean to my nice people, even though he had a totally good point. But yeah. I mean, like, Pat played it so brilliantly where you could see where he was coming from. But at the same time, you know, he's coming off as, you know, a little heavy, as big brothers can. And, you know, as I said to Annie earlier this week when we were talking about this character, I said, every family needs to have kind of a jackass. And so it's like, it's a very relatable situation where your big brother is kind of like, he's got my interests at heart, but he's kind of going about it in a way that I would not want him to. And so I'll be honest, I've always had a little bit of a hate on for Bill Scully. I don't know, Pat, if you were kind of like imagining that would be the outcome when you were playing that role, that, oh my God, the fans are going to hate me now.
No. No, I'm still surprised that they do.
Oh,
you know, no, I am. I'm surprised. I'm still surprised by it. But look, I didn't yell at Mulder when I called him a son of a bitch. It's simply a fact.
Yeah, it was very. But, you played it really well.
No, because here's a person who has spent his life looking for aliens, looking for little green men. And I ask him, have you found them? And he says, no. And I say, well, that just makes you a sorry son of a bitch, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a fact.
Yeah.
Well, and I think he knows that too, which I think is what makes that scene.
Yes. That's what's brilliant about the scene.
Yep.
Because David is really, really fucking brilliant in that scene. You know, here's a man who lives completely in the gray area. That's what's great about the character of Mulder, is there is no real right and wrong. There's only exploration. There's only hypothesis, right? And so, yes, when someone says that you're a son of a bitch, he weighs that as a possibility.
Yep.
Except it is partially the truth. That's what's so great about that scene, you know? I get that people were in love with Mulder, and so it was offensive to have somebody actually point out the truth about him.
Mm-hmm.
It was the truth at that moment.
Right? It's definitely a justifiable opinion, and that is a great aspect of that scene. I totally agree. Where it's interesting, because it could have gone in a direction where, like, you're angry, he's angry, you're yelling at each other. It could have gone that way. But I love the way that it was written and played, where obviously Bill is kind of got a little rage going on, but it's just under the surface. And you can see how angry he is.
It's restrained.
But it's played, yeah, very restrained. You can see that that's like, you know, the restrained military guy.
Yep.
He's got all those emotions, but he's like, he's just keeping it under control. And Mulder's not disagreeing with him. And so it's kind of like this weird sort of angry argument, but really most of the anger is coming from one side. And it's interesting. It's just kind of different from the way you might expect a scene like that to go and to be played.
When especially in drama, but in life, scenes between men, confrontations between men, often they're fairly easily definable. Most of scenes are about power.
Mm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Even if it's, you know, say three friends, you meet up with three guys and they go to drink beer. There's a power struggle that happens. It's a kind of an animal, sort of thing that happens. Who's the most powerful? If you don't, you're friends with one guy and then there's some other guy that you don't know. There's always a bit of squaring off that happens where, you know, I need to know where you stand. I need to know who you are. Right. And so, but in drama like this, a vast majority of scenes between two men, between Mulder and Skinner, for example, between Mulder and the cigarette smoking man, between Mulder and basically any male character, they're all power scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Who's the most powerful? And so how that, how those scenes evolve is where the interest lies. And you know, it's power is a subtle thing. It's you get this idea that, you know, two men sort of yelling at each other or beating each other up to determine who's the strongest. But these scenes play out every day, and particularly in drama, they can be incredibly subtle, and the power shifts back and forth, right? And that's what makes it interesting to watch. The scenes between Mulder and the cigarette smoking man are all straight power scenes. And if you look at them from that point of view, you know, the CSM never gives up his power almost ever for 11 seasons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never, ever.
No.
He knows something that you don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always. Yeah. He's always a step ahead of you. There's always an implied threat that I'm going to do something that you can't possibly imagine. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, Mulder will gain power on him only to have to give it back, or the cigarette smoking man takes it back. So these scenes between Bill Scully and Mulder are straight up power scenes. Mm-hmm. Who has ownership of Scully?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's my sister. I knew her first. For her now, as a powerful woman, he has power, and it goes back and forth, right?
Mm.
So that's how, you know, I mean, from an actor's perspective, power, particularly in male-male scenes, and you know, oftentimes, even in male-female scenes, is the sexual power goes back and forth. If you watch Scully and Mulder, she's often in power.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're not going to have any disagreements with that here.
She's often powerful for him, but he takes it back in subtle ways with his intelligence and his natural, you know, sort of sexual charm.
Yeah.
It disarms her, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So that's there's almost no scene in 11 seasons of the show that's not a power scene. Mm. That's my view of it anyway.
That's a really interesting perspective.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny, I might argue that of all the men in the series, that Mulder is most terrified of Bill Scully. I think because I feel like it's the one of the few scenes. I mean, this isn't true because there are more scenes. There's that scene with Skinner in One Breath when Scully's in the coma and they have a nice little heart to heart. But I feel like this scene with Mulder and Bill Scully, the one in Redux 2 that we've been talking about in particular, is one of the very rare moments where he, I think he really feels the accountability. Like he really feels the weight of his own actions. And he's had that pointed out to him by somebody, at least somebody he perceives to be close to Scully. And I think that's really powerful. I mean, I just think the idea of having this family member approach him and call him out essentially on his bullshit, I think was a really good idea. And I think for that reason, I think Bill Scully was a really sort of important character. And I think Scully sees that too. I think she's obviously struggling with the power dynamic there as well. But I think she sees that too. And I think we as viewers are meant to see that as well. And I think that's a really interesting point. The power. I like that.
I like that. That's really great.
I liked David enormously personally. He was very welcoming and friendly and encouraging. And so he saw me as an equal, and so it made it easy to play the scene because it's a battle between equals, right? It's a battle for supremacy between equals.
Yeah.
I think in the end, I sort of win, at least temporarily.
Yeah. And he knows it. Yeah.
He has to admit. Yes, I am. Yeah, I mean, basically, at the end of the thing, it's yes, I'm. Mulder basically says, yes, I am a giant piece of shit.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. He puts up the white flag of surrender pretty much. It's like he's got no comeback because, you know, Bill really is dropping the truth bombs. There's really no, he's got nothing to say to that because there's nothing you can say.
Right. Yeah. The truth is the ultimate weapon in a power scene.
Yeah, especially for Mulder. He can't. Of course, Mulder can't deny the truth. That's his thing. That's his bag.
That's what the X-Files is all about.
Yeah. God. Yeah. Do you? Great. So your arcs on this show.
The way David played that character, the subtle way that he played out his many, many, many years of power scenes. Mm-hmm. His power. He won a lot of the power scenes by pretending not to engage or with people. You know, he would sort of lay in the weeds and not confront and win in the place of non-confrontation. Yeah. It's what was very interesting about, you know, the work that he did on the show, which I, you know, think is somewhat underrated and I quite admirable. There are some scenes that he played over the years where I thought, oh yeah, well there it is, isn't it? Guy was really, really great. She got lots of, she got a lot of the praise because she's an extraordinarily powerful actress. But there is no her without him.
I would agree with that. And I think that's really nice to hear you say. We talk on the podcast a lot about how underrated David's performance is as Mulder. And I think when you see that performance, I think the reason that people don't think it's, maybe sometimes they don't think it's anything to write home about, is because he played it so perfectly. He's doing his job so well. Like some of the subtleties that he brings to that performance are almost too subtle just by design. And I think we talk about that a lot. Like Jillian is amazing, obviously, but she gets, I think, a lot more meat, I think, to work with at times, whereas Mulder doesn't. He's just being Mulder and he's doing it well. And so I'm glad to hear you say that. We both agree with you that David is amazing as Mulder and underrated. Yes. Do you have any great memories of working with David? Like any fun stories or anything? Like, obviously, you guys, your only really big scene is like you guys glaring at each other. So,
No, I don't. Because, I mean, he was just very, very, I met him before we worked together and he had seen me in he had seen the work that I had done already in the show, and he was just extremely friendly and complimentary, and you know, and so, you know, it put me at ease to work with him. You know, I mean, you go on to a show like this one, it's already established, it's 4 years in, everybody's buying houses, they're all movie stars and have lamps and stuff, and you're, you know, this person who's, you know, coming, you're jumping on a moving train, it can be intimidating. And so, you know, to have, you know, and I've done many, many, you know, of these sort of guest starring parts, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But to have somebody like him, you know, be so generous, I think is the word, made it easy for me. And it made me like him personally quite a lot. So, but, you know, I fly up to Vancouver and I'm in a hotel by myself and they're all living at homes or something. You know, a lot of times when you're on location, everybody's living in a hotel. So you go to dinner together and get drunk together and sleep together. Not me, but there's all kinds of shit that happens, you know, and there's,
oh, please do tell us more.
It's like summer camp with booze, you know, and anytime you play and you're making a TV show or a movie or something, it's pretty good fun. And they're paying you and they're also in the hotel and all the stuff. It's pretty fun. But on this particular show, you know, they were living there and they would go home at night. So I was just basically living at the, you know, at the Hotel Sutton by myself for some weeks doing this show. I was also complicated by the fact that my father was dying while I was shooting it. In fact, died. I'm trying to think of the episode name. It's the one where we buried a little girl.
Emily?
Yes, Emily.
Mm, yeah.
My father died, and then I got to go shoot Emily's funeral.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was kind of a strange day.
Yeah.
And then the woman who played my wife,
we're blanking. I'm going to look it up. Keep talking. we'll track it down.
Spacing out. She's a really lovely woman.
I know the character's name is Tara. I know that.
That's right. I was going to say Tanya. And then there was Tara. And then,
oh, wait. Carrie Turner?
Carrie Turner, yes.
There we go.
Who was on JAG for many, many years, the TV show JAG. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she took me out and bought me dinner and drinks afterwards. It was a super long day for me, though.
Yeah, I'll bet. I get
to the set at like 7 in the morning. And before I leave my hotel room, my mother calls me and says, oh, well, your father's, I think, you know, dying, actively dying now. He had been sick for some months. And I said, oh, okay, well, love you, Mom, and hang up and then go work. And then and I called sometime later and he had died in my absence. And then go on to shoot that thing. It was a difficult day. And then Carrie and I went out and I believe I got utterly wasted after that. But, you know, quite frankly, I was kind of stunned. I was just kind of there, you know. I don't remember much about it. And, you know, it was a bad day. But it's a long time ago, too.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of how long my father's been dead for, more than 20 years, I think.
It would. Well, it would be what, 98? That sounds about right.
97?
Wait, I have this open. I could look. 97, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a long, long, long time ago. 23
years ago.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem that long ago when I think back to 97.
But that's clearly a memory that stuck with you. So.
She has a new boyfriend. So.
Wait, who?
My mother is still living. She has a new boyfriend.
Oh.
Good for her.
New as of now? Good for her.
My mother is 84. She has a new boyfriend of 87.
Nice.
That is adorable.
Those two crazy kids.
I already ship them.
Anyway, back to X-Files.
So,
that was a difficult day.
Yeah.
I remember Jillian was very kind to me that day. Rob Bowman was very kind to me that day.
Do you, I mean, you got to work with Jillian probably more than anybody else. Do you have any recollections or stories of working with her or any memories from working with her?
Well, I mean, a lot. I mean, first of all, she's this, it's obvious, it's no secret that she is a major talent, and she was as prepared, I would say, as any actor I ever worked with, to work every day. If you don't do what we do, it's kind of hard to imagine what the process is like.
Yeah. Right?
But working in TV is very fast. And if you don't come prepared, you don't do very well. And there are people who can fake it and get by. You'll see a lot of it. A lot of that, if you know what you're looking for. She was always prepared. She was a serious professional. And I don't use those terms. I don't throw those terms around very much.
Yeah.
She as good as anybody I ever worked with.
Yeah, and you've worked with a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of people. Yeah.
I work with some really good people over the years, but I have a tremendous amount of respect for her ability. And, she was very available to me as an actor. And, she had a lot going on at that time. She had a young daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of drama backstage. There was a lot of talk about the show leaving Vancouver. I believe that she and David were not getting along when I was there.
Yeah, we've heard things about that.
Yeah. And it was very clear that they weren't getting along. None of that had anything to do with me. I mean, they were both very nice to me. And they, when they were working together, I didn't, see it. But off screen, I could tell they didn't talk to each other. They were kind of standoffish. There was a lot of stuff going on. I don't pretend to know what it was about, but her life felt like, this is an observer, felt like she was in turmoil. So
there was a lot going on right around that. I think that they were filming the movie all simultaneously, from what I recall. And they were also talking about moving to...
We're only in season 4 and 5, so the movie was later, wasn't it?
No, the movie was being filmed, I think, between season 4 and season 5. So they probably weren't filming it currently, but they were filming it prior to your episodes. Mm-hmm. But I think there was a lot of talk, like you said, at that time about the production moving to L.A., which I'm sure caused a lot of
tension. Well, I know that while I was there, David had gone to L.A., for like the Golden Globes or something. Like they had flown them there for the Emmys or the Golden Globes or something. While I was there, one of the episodes I was on, and he had gone on with Leno.
Oh.
And he had said something about leaving Vancouver on Leno.
Ooh.
But that was the first time it had been talked about. And so that ended up, it was on like the front page of the Vancouver Gazette or whatever hell newspaper they have.
So wait, that's how she found out, or that's how other people found out? Wow. Ooh. I didn't know that.
Ouch.
And so then, and I think that, this is just my, I might be wrong, and I probably shouldn't even talk about this, but I think that they had been working on this, sort of plan to go back to LA, which I don't blame them, together, privately, that was their plan. And so he sort of blurted it out on Leno, and I think she was really mad about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I can understand that. I recall that. I mean, I don't recall that, but I recall that happening at the time. Obviously, I think between seasons 5 and 6 is when they moved to LA. So, yeah.
It seems like at the time when they moved to LA, I recall that David kind of, I don't know if blame is the right word. I mean, I live in Canada, so us up here, we were kind of like, how dare you leave? And so it was regarded more as blame. And it seemed like a lot of people were putting it on David, that it was all his fault, that
it was
he
was the one who wanted to do it. I mean, that's kind of the narrative that's out there. I don't know how much of that is true. I'm assuming it's true, but that was what we all understood, was that he was moving out to LA, so the production was following.
That was not my impression, but I'm a minor player in this drama.
I would love to know your impression.
My impression was that they both wanted to leave LA.
Or leave Vancouver, you mean?
Go to LA.
Yeah.
That was my impression. But I no one ever told me that. And I just saw what was going down, and there was there was some drama. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it might have wound up being a case of like just shooting the messenger, because David was the one who kind of, like you say, blurted it out on Leno.
Yeah.
And so I think people tended to associate it more with him. So I think that's probably have been both of them.
It could be that my impression is wrong too. So
right. I mean, but if there is,
it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. I think it could be, I don't know, it could be a number.
Sounds
of
logical
factors,
to me.
But,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
I love Vancouver, but I understand that actors who are, you know, have a base down in the States don't want to necessarily stay there.
Vancouver is fantastic.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's great. But you know, to be on location away from your home.
Yeah.
For many, many years.
Yeah.
It's difficult. I mean, if you live in LA and you're living in another place 9 months out of the year, 8 months out of the year, it's a burden.
Right.
And, you know, I think it just got to a point where they could use their power to change that. So that happens, but I don't really know how it worked out, but I mean, they came to LA and did shoot a few seasons here.
Well, yeah. I mean, and I love all of the X-Files, but my personal favorite season is season 6, which is the one that they filmed in LA, which Jen would disagree with me on, because she got real bitter when they moved to LA.
Real bitter when they moved to LA, and it took me a long time to get over it. So I had a bit of a grudge against season 6 for a while, but I'm over it now.
She is over it now.
I would agree though. I mean, I would agree though that from my perspective, the show changed for better or for worse.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I think in terms of the quality of light, just the way that it filmed, it looked better in Vancouver than it did in LA.
It looked more X-Filesy.
I couldn't agree more. I just think that the Vancouver seasons just look more X-Filesy to me, because there is a certain light in Vancouver, especially, and a certain lushness to it.
Yeah.
Coldness to it, a certain misty coldness to it that is not here. Here is arid desert, you know.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, you're not going to have not going to be a lot of scenes in California where you can see people's breath, for example. So that's just very different, very different climate, very different look.
Yeah, I mean, if it's January or February, you know, December, yes, you will. But I mean, mostly you're not, and I am.
Yeah, it was funny though how once they moved to LA, like suddenly a lot more of their cases were taking place on the West Coast. It was like, no, we're going to Arizona. Oh no, we're going to LA. Okay, let's just make it in LA. Why not? We could fly across the country. No big deal.
Yeah,
it was pretty funny. But you got to do what you got to do, right? These are a lot of these behind the scenes production issues that like people tend to take out on the series, and it's always just kind of like, look, you know what? Sometimes stuff happens.
People just have to live their lives, right?
Exactly.
Can't hold that against them. They're human beings.
Personally, I love the show wherever it was filmed. So whatever. It is what it
Me
is.
Too.
So you had Gethsemane, Redux 2, Christmas Carol, and Emily. Those were your four episodes. Did you know in Emily that was going to be your last episode?
Yes, that one too.
Wait, which one? Oh, Memento Mori.
Where I got cut.
Yeah, yes. Memento Mori.
We'll count
also.
That one. Yep.
That counts.
I ended up being on Beyond the X-Files or something, like with some compilation episode, and they put that.
Something for one of the DVDs or something, I think it was.
No, but there was they put it on TV like it was a Return to the X-Files or something. Anyway, they put a bunch of scenes that got cut into a thing and they put it on there. That was like six or something, I think.
Was that like a nice surprise? Like, did you know that was going to happen, or were you just like...
They called me and told me out.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Cool.
They finally showed that scene that I like so much. Oh.
Yeah.
Right. At least it got broadcast eventually.
Jen's going to watch it immediately after this is over. So don't you worry about
that. Well, I don't know. The way you guys are talking about it, I'm thinking maybe I shouldn't. It'll turn me against Bill Scully even more. So I'm not so sure I should.
I think you should see it for Julianne and Pat's performances alone. Yeah. I think that you should.
I would like to see that. Yeah.
It's a very interesting, awkward little scene. It's good.
Yeah. Awkward little scenes are awesome. Well, so it's one of those. That's great.
It's one of those scenes where it starts out where you think, oh, this is going to be nice. It's Scully's got her brother and this is great. And then suddenly, like at a certain point, it just kind of takes a turn and you're like, no, I don't like this anymore. I'm uncomfortable. And those are like my favorite kinds of scenes. So well done.
Yeah, absolutely. Very cool.
Did they ever, was there ever any talk after Emily for you to come back, or were you ever expecting to come back, or were you just kind of like, well, this is it for Bill, or what were your thoughts on that?
I was never asked to come back after that. I don't know. I would come back now. It just never came up. I sort of felt like after that episode with Emily that it was over. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
But you would have liked to have come back for Bill if they had. This is interesting because my next question is like, because your character, you watched all of the series, right? Did you watch the revival?
I watched some of it. I watched season 10, most of it.
You saw then season 10 was where Bill was actually referenced and Scully's talking to him on the phone. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
So I guess my question is, what are your thoughts on what happened to Bill? Like, do you think that they seem to still be in touch, but he's obviously stationed, I think, in Germany is what they say in the episode. Mm-hmm. So maybe they're not very close, but still in touch. Like, do you have any ideas of what happened to your character?
No, I don't. I think, you know, I think that from their point of view, there was really no point in bringing him back. I didn't spend much time thinking about why. No,
because I'm interested because obviously, like as you're watching the show, you see Mulder and Scully's relationship change and it turns into something else. And I wonder, like, I have this idea in my head that Bill always hated Mulder. Like, it never got better. Like, would you agree with that? Or do you think at a certain point it got better? Or do you think it just continued to get worse because of all the stuff that happens to them? And do you have any thoughts on that? Because I'm just kind of curious.
I would doubt we would ever be friends. Yes.
Right. Okay. Well, I can see that. Yeah. That's kind of what I always assume, too. I feel like I just didn't think there would be any coming around for the two of them.
I mean, it's hard to imagine the Scullys having a holiday gathering, but Sheila was very lovely, the mom.
Oh yeah, tell us about Sheila. What was it like working with Sheila?
Oh gosh, she was a lovely person. I mean, she's very. I mean, I don't know. His matronly always has kind of a bad connotation to it, or something. Seemed like a pejorative, but
she's like the mom on set.
Like, yeah, she was very, very caring person, and very available emotionally, and obviously cared a lot about Jillian from the get go, and she and I. Instantly had a rapport. I liked her enormously. She's a really nice person. The first episode that I did, I believe her husband directed.
Oh yeah.
What he directed many episodes. What was the guy's name?
Is that R.W. Goodwin?
Yeah, Robert Goodwin. Yeah,
Bob.
Goodwin.
Wow, she was married to him. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and they lived. They live nearby. I mean, I think he was one of the producers too, wasn't he?
Yeah.
They lived in Bellingham, Washington.
Oh, right. Just across the border.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, she's great. She's really great. I thought she was very dear.
Mm. Yeah.
Nice. Aww. It's exactly how she seems. It's kind of nice to hear that because, you know, she gives off that vibe. So it's nice to hear that that's what she's like in real life.
That's what we would love to hear.
Which, you know, honestly, is not something you can count on.
Right.
So, I mean, somebody can sometimes seem like that and be the complete opposite of that. It's often shocking, you know.
Yeah.
Go on to a thing and you think, oh my God, you know, I can't wait to work with this person. They're going to be so, you know, so great and just like their character. And you get there and you realize, oh.
You're like, uh-oh, that's not good.
It can act.
Yeah. Well, you never know, right?
I learned that very early on in my career. You know, I worked with someone who was very beloved by TV audiences, and he was an awful, awful man.
Oh, God. And,
at least he was me. And,
Apollo does not like this man either, whoever he is.
So I learned early on, like, not to expect anything.
Right. Just allow yourself to be pleasantly surprised, eh?
Show up and
hope for the best, expect the worst, sort of.
That's a bonus. If not, just do the job and you go home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, speaking about doing the job, I mean, we were both looking down your IMDb here, and you have been on, I think it's safe to say, every television show ever known to man. I don't even want to name them because consistently,
like for years, like there's not like big gaps in your career or anything, but like, you know, from before the X-Files right up till now.
I'm working on a giant gap right now.
Yeah.
Well, we all are. We all are.
This bullshit.
Yeah.
Waiting period for COVID. Yeah. It's awful. I hate it.
Yeah, we're all going to have like big gaps in our lives.
I've had a long career. I've been fortunate in many, many ways.
Yeah, you're the definitive working actor here. I mean, it's
kind of the point for most of us, you know, to be a working actor. It's been my goal in life. And I've been very fortunate. And I've had lots of great parts. I've never gotten to have a series and make the money, which is tragic. Because I would like to have the money, more than the money. You know, you get to show up and you're on the team every day. You know, when you're like me, you know, or like most actors, really.
Yeah.
You show up and you have to try out for the team every day of your life.
Yeah. That's interesting.
People don't have a stomach for it. You know, it's a hard way to live, and sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Looking at like how successful that you've been too, that you still walk away thinking that, like, that, I mean, I don't know anything about acting and I want to talk to you about that in a moment, but like, I can imagine that it just, that stress never goes away, you know, of what is it going to be like this time? Every time you're walking into a situation, it could be completely different. Like you said, you could expect one thing and it can be something entirely different every single time.
Right.
And this list is daunting, let me tell you. I have to ask you, though, I'm going to go off X-Files track and reveal another one of my geekdoms. I am a huge Boston Legal fan. And I remember you on that show, and I love that show. I just wanted to give you a little shout out for that because I love
that show.
Yeah.
Loved that show. The writing was
genius.
Spectacular.
Yeah.
Spectacular. And... you know, I really enjoyed working on it. There's a guy, he was a director named Bill D'Elia, who I'd worked with on West Wing and on another show called, I can't remember. He directed me in a few of those episodes. And I just loved that show. I you know, William Shatner and James Spader.
Oh God,
they're two weirdest fucking guys that you'll
right.
Ever, they're so weird.
Please tell me a story. Please. Please tell me a William Shatner and James Spader story.
Well, they're just like from outer space, both of them. They're just very strange men. But,
oh my God.
But they have this weird, they're like two aliens who like meet together and create some of the scenes that they had together. Genius. I mean, crazy, crazy genius stuff. I mean, James Spader is a terrific actor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Strange, though.
Yeah, and I've seen some of his interviews, and he strikes me as a super strange guy. But, like, yeah, he also strikes me as, like, he and William Shatner would get together and have conversations that everyone else is, like, don't know what you guys are even talking about.
Shatner is just peculiar, man. And and it's like, you put them both in the same room, you expect some kind of weird antimatter reaction.
Oh, my God.
But I liked both. They're both very nice. And they both, very consummate professionals. They were always ready, they're just unusual people. Of course, I'm attracted to unusual people.
Oh, as are we.
Right. So, but yeah, I mean, that was why I really, really liked working on that show a lot.
Well, I'm pleased to hear that those two are not the terrible men you're referring to. I mean,
no, they were both great.
Yeah.
Out there, man. You know,
Jen, did any of these shows, did you geek out about that you want to ask?
No, I mean, I think I've seen like at least an episode of every show practically, yeah. Because I mean, like that was like the prime television watching time in my life. So that was back in the day when, you know, we didn't have streaming to pick from and things like that. So it was always, you know, flip, flip, flip through the channels. And I probably came across Pat like 17 times throughout the 90s and early 2000s. So he was definitely in a lot of high profile shows.
Well, you know, TV has changed considerably, too. I mean, in those days, you know, you had a show like, you know, Matlock or Hunter or, you know, some of these shows. And it was like this, you know, one guy against all the bad guys.
Yeah. So
a lot of us had great careers just being bad guy of the week.
Yeah. You
know? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I played lots of those guys during that phase of it, sort of in the late 90s and the, you know, probably to like 2000, that whole period of time, that's a lot of TV was sort of, you know, like cop shows.
Yeah.
And, you know, NYPD Blue and all these kinds of different things where they needed bad guys every week. So a lot of us, you know, that's how we got started doing that stuff. It was fun.
Yeah. You did it very well.
Yeah. Do you have any favorite shows that you ever worked on, like besides The X-Files, of course? Is there any that stand out in your mind that you really enjoyed working on?
Well, I only did one episode, but I really loved West Wing. Yeah. I probably watched almost every episode of that show, and I really liked the guy that I played on that show. You know, some of my best work was in shows that nobody ever watched, or, you know, this series Bosch that's on Amazon now. Mm. I was in the first season of that,
right?
And that was a great role. I have to admit, I had not watched Bosch before until, you know, I was doing a little bit of research into your career, and I was like, Bosch. And then I was like, it's been on for like six or seven seasons, and this is like the greatest show no one's heard of, right?
Wow, which is hard to believe.
Yeah. So yeah, so I went back and sort of watched some bits of your role, an outstanding role. It looks like quite a cool show, so I'm gonna have to watch more of it.
Well, and I've been wanting to watch that because, as you know, in LA, you drive around and you see the billboards constantly. I've seen those billboards, and Titus Welliver, is that his name, right? He was also on The X-Files. He was a guest bit on The X-Files. Did you guys ever chat about that?
Titus and I, we've known each other for a long time on and off. He and I had very similar careers, you know, just show up and, you know, be on Quantum Leap or some shit like that. So anyway, yeah, Titus Titus, that was Titus's career. I mean, this was really, you know, I mean, this is the place where he finally got to emerge as the star of something after many, many years of working in the vineyards, you know. But the character that I played on this show, probably the worst human being that I ever played. And torturous stuff.
Ooh. Well, and, you sold me.
And I enjoyed it very much. And Titus and I had a lot of scenes together. We had done a movie together like 20 years prior. So it was fun to actually work on something else, to, you know, something good together instead of the horrible movie we did. And, but I, you know, that was a really, a highlight. You know, I played many serial killers and sex offenders and people who are damaged, very damaged people. And it requires kind of an investment in your own strangeness, and they're very difficult and challenging parts to play, and so those kinds of parts to take you on a journey, and you don't know where you're going to end up at the end. And I, you know, they're very immersive, and so to me, the people who are really, really damaged are the most interesting people to play. And I've done a lot of them, and so but you know, that's kind of where my career has been. But you know, a good chunk of the stuff I played have been power scenes, like we talked about, against Bill Scully, the bad general, the corrupt police officer, you know, various businessmen, Republican politicians mainly I get to play. I never get the Democratic politician.
Well, the Republican ones are always the evil ones, so.
They have a different point of view, let's say.
No offense, you know, we're not going to talk politics, but
No.
The party has changed quite a bit.
I'm an old liberal, but I have an appreciation for old school conservatives. There are very few of them left. There are a few.
Yeah.
And some of them have left the Republican Party because the party has left them, you know.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah.
But I'm an old school kind of liberal, labor liberal, and so our party is sort of leading me in some ways. But
everything is insanity right now. I mean, there's really no way around that. But it's crazy.
I'm glad I live in Canada.
I know, poor Jen. I'm like, I'm ready to move up and live with you. Please
come on up. anyone is welcome at all times. Please feel free to come and claim refugee status.
Things are going to the. There's a lot of alarmism. Has Trump damaged the country? Yes. Has Trump damaged the system? Yes. Is Trump a piece of shit? Yes. But, you know, I think there's a kind of a reactionary fear that the country is irreparably damaged, and simply not true.
Well, I hope that's true.
We the people are stronger than that. The Constitution is stronger than that. And we will survive this. And in the end, I believe we will be better for it.
So you wrote a book, right? Recently? Tell us about it.
Some years ago, I have a friend who, she's young, an actress who, her mother and I went to high school together, and she'd moved out here, and I was helping her with her auditions and stuff. And I, you know, I was coaching her on how to be a professional actor, you know, and I thought, well, you know, what is it that I do? You know, what is my actual process for being an actor? What do I do? You know, and you know, how do I do this? And a lot of you know, quite honestly, I'd been doing it so long, a lot of it was just, I didn't really even think about my process. I just sort of did it. And so then I started questioning that and said, well, are there ways to improve? How do I get better as an actor? And how do I get better at teaching this young woman how to be a professional actor? And so I started writing things down and I started experimenting, and I kind of got together a bunch, some other, you know, younger actors, and we sort of experimented together with, you know, what is a process that is actually repeatable and reliable, so that, you know, under the very oftentimes pressure filled, the given circumstances of working in a TV show can be very pressure packed, right? What's the best way to approach this? How you know, people are trained, a lot of actors like I was are trained in the theater, where you have 3.5 weeks of rehearsal and then you go on stage and do it. And then, you know, a lot of times you'll get an audition here and you'll have 3.5 hours. Okay, so it's a big difference. How do you get to a place of where you're confident and good and powerful and you have something that you can show people in a very short amount of time? And so anyway, I kind of started an acting studio, and I've been training young actors for a long time now. And so, you know, sort of a book developed out of that. And there's a lot of good stuff in it. I think it might be a different book if I wrote it now, because it took me quite a few years of experimentation to find the things that actually help people. Well, it takes a while to get to mastery of anything.
Yeah. Well, it seems like a really practical, I mean, I haven't read it. I'm not an actor. We should say the title of the book. It's The Working Actor, A No Bullshit Approach to Winning the Acting Game, which I think is a great title, by the way.
It's a great title, yeah.
it does feel like, it seems like it's a very practical guide to just anyone who's looking for how to even approach this. So.
Right. And it is. If I were to write it again, it might be like, you know, considerably shorter, you know, and just like straight to the point. But you know, I actually, unlike a lot of acting books, I refer to real life experiences, how I applied certain mechanics, certain theories to real life situations of working in a TV show. You know, how do you get onto a show like West Wing, which is like a moving train? How do you jump onto the train without getting splatted into the side? You know, what do you do first? What do you do second? How to be relaxed enough to compete as a professional? So it's been a great part of my life. I mean, last 6 or 7 years, I've been devoted to acting as a sport, kind of, and putting people in training, you know, sort of like they're figure skaters, pushing people, getting them into great shape so that they can go out and get parts. And I wish I had found out earlier in my life how much I enjoyed doing it, because I would have done it sooner. Unfortunately, in the age of COVID, all the work that I did to build my studio has gone up in smoke, and my theater and my studio has been dark since March. I'm hopeful that, you know, once we get in this back again, then I can go back in the studio and work with young actors, because it brings me tremendous pleasure. And I'm all about pleasure at this point in my life.
Hey, why
you know,
not?
There's really not much else right now to deal with.
It's just sort of like you're in high school, right? And there's like some girl who's a great tennis player, right? Or some guy who's a great baseball player in high school. But the odds of them making it as a professional sports person are very, very low.
Yeah.
It's the same is true for, you know, somebody who's playing the flute in your high school band or somebody who's playing the lead in your high school play.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? And so going from being the lead in the high school play to being Gillian Anderson is a tremendous gulf. And but somebody does it. It happens.
Yeah. Right?
It happens. Yeah. Jillian went from that to David went from that to that. Mm-hmm. You know, James Spader went from the high school play. I mean, we all did in some way or other. So it does happen. It is possible. And how do you increase your odds of making it work for you? That's sort of what I've been interested in. But I've always been a creative person, and I'm always creative. I mean, even during this pandemic, I'm recording poetry that I like and putting it on Facebook.
Oh, we love that. We need to plug that, by the way. Your poetry readings on Facebook are fabulous. Such a great little outlet for you to express like your talent and your love for acting in a way that is like personal to you. And they're great. They're amazing.
I just really like the words. And I honestly couldn't leave my house because I was in heart failure, and they said if I got COVID, I would die. So it's like, you know, you can kill me, but that doesn't mean I can't create stuff. You know, I've always created stuff, and it's the thing that sustained me. It's the thing that I live for. It's the thing that's made me, survive. The Reaper will come for me, but I'll be still creating something at the end. So anyway, it just sort of happened by accident that I landed on poetry because I like poetry a lot. And I thought, well, nobody really reads poems, do they? And I was just sitting there with my phone one day. So let me record this and see if it doesn't suck, you know? So I'm still learning how to do it kind of because each one of them is different. Like they say, you know, there are some people who are just really creative. Like if you my daughter, if you give her a pen, she's going to be drawing something. She's always going to be tearing up paper and making art of some kind. Some people are like that, you know, and that's just who I've always been. You know, so
that's great. It's great that you've passed that on too, it seems. So it's always nice to be putting out your own little pieces of yourself into the world. That's a great little thing. I'm glad you brought up the your poetry readings.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Such a delight.
No, you guys are creating this. This is your thing, right?
This is our thing, yeah.
This is definitely, one of our things. We all have many things, but this is one of our things for sure. We're trying to keep this fandom alive because it's pretty amazing that there are still such rabid fans of this show.
A lot,
and they have opinions, which I'm sure that you have seen.
Everybody's been really nice, you know. Yeah. I have hundreds of X-Files friends, you know, on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Really nice. There are a couple who are sort of jerky. I just got rid of them.
Yeah.
Good.
I got rid of half of my high school class because of Trump. But,
oh, yeah, me too. That's why I left Facebook.
but, you know, I really enjoyed a lot of the X-Files fandom. A lot of them are very imaginative and friendly. I really quite enjoyed it, you know, and they're from all over the world.
Yeah, it is amazing. It's internationally, they're everywhere. Yeah.
German fans and fans from England and Australia.
America.
I enjoy them. I mean, not too many of them like Bill Scully, but they don't.
That's okay, though. That's all right. They still like you. Yeah, no,
it's a great fandom, the X-Files fandom. It is, in my experience, lots of really, really cool and interesting people. And like you say, from all over the world. So it's been a great way for me to meet a lot of interesting people, too.
Yeah. Very thoughtful people. Yeah. With a lot of ideas. And it's a great show to sort of have that as a bouncing off point for all of these ideas and thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't think really there are very many shows that did what The X-Files did in that regard, of just giving you things to talk about and things to think about and leaving things so obscure that we were going to be endlessly debating them forever. And I mean, that's what makes a great show. That's what's that's what's so great about it. And I think that's
many years ago we did a play with Vivian Vance. You know who Vivian Vance was? She was Ethel Mertz.
Yes, I was like, that sounds familiar. Okay, right? Gotcha. Yeah.
On the Lucy show, like black and white, you know, I Love Lucy, right? And he was doing a play with her, and she's like, oh, you know, I've got to go do this convention, you know. Why don't you come with me? I need someone to talk to. And so he goes to this convention. Well, pretty much everybody who was on I Love Lucy is dead, you know, except for like Ethel Mertz. And this one guy who had like five lines as the elevator operator. he's like, so we're at this convention. There's this guy who was the elevator operator with five lines. And they're like, ah! He was like Mick Jagger to these people.
Well, we cling to these little morsels, like anything.
So I totally get fandom, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the first time I was exposed to it, though, was on Quantum Leap. There were like quite a number of like leapers, man. There were, there were conventions, and they would show up with their little like thing that, I don't know, the little leap device or whatever. You know, that was quite an eye opener. That was the first time I had been really exposed to that, because I did a couple episodes of that show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I enjoyed very much meeting the X-Files people. They're all very nice.
Well, speaking of X-Files people, we just have a couple listener questions. I wanted to ask these to you because I think these people deserve a shout out, even though you might have already covered some of this. But SKS asked, how much backstory did you get for Bill Jr. and how much did you create yourself to make Bill's disapproval of Scully's choices and anger towards Mulder believable?
Right. It all comes from me. I got no, other than the script, which provides you certain clues, right? You're sort of in collaboration with the writer. The writer provides you with this, and then in terms of your internal life, your history, and all of that, that's the job of the actor, right? You create your given circumstances yourself, right? And so I always start with a given circumstances, like who am I and where do I live and who's in my life? Where do I go to church? What are my beliefs? So I ask myself a lot of questions, and I come up with a series of given circumstances or a backstory, so that I know what it is that I'm doing, and I know what it is my character like desires to have happen in these scenes. So that's what I teach actors in my studio too, but. But that's a good question, because they don't give you like a thing saying, oh, here's your backstory. No, that's right.
Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. I always wonder if they tell you anything. I mean, obviously, you know that you're, you know, in the Navy and these sorts of things. And there's some backstory that they've already given you in the series. Like, you know, we've met Scully's dad in one episode, or your dad, so to speak. So there are things like that that you would probably have like little clues. But yeah, okay, that's interesting, and I love the idea that that's mostly from you, from your own,
right.
Your own experiences. So Erica asks, I think we know the answer to this. If you yourself in real life knew Mulder, would you like him or hate him?
Because there's nothing in between.
not as Bill Scully.
In real life, I would have liked him.
Okay, good answer. Good answer.
I really like him. Unusual people in my life. I prefer unusual people.
Yeah.
Cool.
Certainly unusual.
Nice.
Oh yeah, he is. That's true. Sarah asks, did you ever feel that Bill was too harsh on Scully and her dedication to her career? Do you think he would have acted the same if it were his brother versus his sister?
Oh, well, that's a great question.
Yeah.
Do I think I was too harsh? No. That's kind of a judgment. And if it had been a brother, I think it would have been different. Yes. because the transaction between men is different between different than it, than our way we men deal with any woman. Almost always there's some difference.
Yeah.
In the genders. But yeah, no, my relationship with my own sister is quite different than my relationship with my brother. But as I say before, you know, male scenes are about power. Male-female scenes are usually more complicated than that.
Yeah. I think that was a really interesting question.
Yeah. Great answer.
Jen, before we get into some, we have a couple quick lightning round questions to end this interview. Did you have anything else you wanted to add, Jen?
I don't think so, but I think that Pat has got some tremendous insights into acting and into the X-Files. So I just wanted to make sure that I expressed my appreciation for that, because he has just brought a plethora of interesting ideas.
Yeah.
Inviting me. I've enjoyed our conversation a lot. So.
Oh, me too. Oh, you know what?
Cool.
I did want to ask you if you had any memories of Chris Carter. Did you ever meet Chris?
Oh yeah. Yeah. A couple of times. Only really in passing though. I mean, he never directed any of the episodes that I was in. So,
right.
You know, Kim Manners and Rob Bowman and, you know, those guys I got to know a bit. And I guess Spotnitz I met a couple times. I met him at the first audition. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, he was kind of in LA while we were shooting a lot of the times. He wasn't really on set. He was on the lot writing this stuff, you know, and shepherding it through post production and doing all of that.
Right.
Are you ready to do some lightning round questions here, Pat?
Yes, I'll do my best.
All right. Do you have a favorite episode of The X-Files?
No.
Could you come up with one that you like that you maybe don't remember the title to?
I like Gethsemane.
Okay.
Yeah, that I like Gethsemane too.
God, that one's super tense.
It's a great episode.
Yeah. Okay, mythology or monster of the week?
Mythology.
Oh, nice. Mulder or Scully?
Scully.
Yeah.
All right, this is the most important one. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Mulder and Scully, platonic partners or soulmates?
Soulmates.
All right.
You know, you did your homework. You
those
know
were
that's
good
the
answers.
Right answer.
Those
good
were
answers,
great answers.
Pat.
I mean, there's no right or wrong, but those were the right answers.
Exactly.
No, but they were built for each other.
They were for better or for worse. They really were. They really were. Well, thank you so much, Pat, for coming on. This was a delight.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much for having me. I enjoyed myself very much. I hope I didn't talk a bunch of nonsense, but I guess I'll find out later if I'm not. All right, guys. We'll talk.
All right. Have a good night. Thanks again.
Thank you, Pat. Appreciate it. Take care.
Thanks, you guys, for listening, and we will see you next time on X-Files Diaries.
Bye.